Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday morning because we are absolutely deployed for the playoffs. Joining me from Memphis, where he's covering the Grizzlies Timberwolves slugfest, is Kevin Arnovitz.
Hey there.
And joining me from Atlanta, where he's soon to fly down to Miami. I'm soon to fly back to Phoenix. I'm in New Orleans. But joining me from Atlanta is Dave McMenamin. Hello, Dave.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
So, Kevin, I have admitted I'm not on this pod. I went nose to nose with Mark Spears last week on the Tuesday pod about how I just really don't believe in. I respect the Wolves' talent, and I'm excited about their future, but I didn't believe in them in this series. Part of it was I had a huge respect for Memphis. Part of it is because I just think that Minnesota has not proven to be a consistent team. You've been with this series for 8 or 9 days now, whatever it is. Spears was very, very, very much of an advocate for the Wolves, and he picked them to win the series. So where are you at with what we've seen in this series so far, now that it's basically a 3-game series?
It's easy to forget that the Wolves were the number one offensive team in basketball in the 2022 calendar year. So this is a team with a depth of shot creation. We've seen Towns. He can score from anywhere on the floor. He's an absolute matchup nightmare. Adams is unplayable. You know, they're playing a little whack-a-mole with getting Brandon Clark out there. They've tried Kyle Anderson, who's been reasonably effective. Xavier Tillman's gotten minutes and had a really nice game against him in game two. But, you know, Towns, frankly, the only person ever stopping Karl Anthony Towns is Karl Anthony Towns when he gets into foul trouble or gets frustrated. They're not as smart a team as Memphis. And what I mean here is I think there are too many times where Anthony Edwards becomes a one dribble pull up jump shooter.
You're being kind. I don't mean to interrupt you. You're being kind. That end of game four, both teams were playing not high IQ basketball. I don't know how eloquently to say it, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't disagree. I think Memphis is better. You know, D'Angelo Russell, he's just not my favorite point guard in a playoff setting. I think really talented point guard to make sure everybody eats. And when Towns was complaining about, you know, he took a lot for only having 4 field goal attempts in that game 3. And, you know, it's funny, I went back and watched it, and you know what? He was asking for the ball. You know what? Russell was going to get going because Russell needed to get going. He needed to start pressuring the defense. And so I just don't think there is cohesive. That's what I mean, kind of a playoff setting, which just kind of requires better oil machinery. But the Wolves are good, and they have exerted really – they've had a decent defensive series. Ja Morant has not gotten off. Jaren Jackson is useless offensively right now. He's had a couple of big threes, but it's been far and few between. And Memphis has not been their best offensive self. I mean, they've had trouble. And the truth is we all know they could very well be down 3-1 in this series.
Towns has got to be the most frustrating, quote unquote, star in today's NBA. And it's not just the inconsistency of his performances. And certainly that's been part of their run so far, where you look back at game 3, where he had 8 points, and it's where is the production? But it's he compounds it by what he says. He makes the comment. He is so extra going into the playoffs to say,
right,
we are the two budding dynasties in the NBA when neither team has even won a playoff series. The other night, when they win game 4, he tells the sideline reporter, I think it was Jared Greenberg, you could tell out there that I'm not that excited. Because he's almost trying to, you know, control the messaging to make it known that, like, you know, I'm not getting overly excited and saying things like we're a budding dynasty and we haven't won a playoff game yet. And it's fascinating to me that he certainly did put himself in a space to perform really well in game 4. But going into game 5 and the remainder of the series, like, I don't know what Karl Anthony Towns I'm going to see.
You know, by the way, as a quick aside, he got a little bit of backlash in game 3 because he was wearing the microphone and he was like, you know, during a huddle where they had the early lead before they blew the game, he was like, yeah, we're in Minnesota now. We're not in Memphis. And like, you know, people were like, oh, you know, you got God. And then Ja Morant tweeted it. Is that a controversial statement? I mean, it was corny. I mean, you know, is like, you're in our house now. Is that, oh no, don't talk trash. Don't say you're in our house. Oh my God. Don't say you're in our house. That's edgy. That's cutting edge.
I mean, let's be honest. And y'all know this as well as anyone. There are certain guys who are kind of punching bags, and we hear it with Rudy Gobert. There's not well liked. So it's like anything else. It's like political discourse. It's not even about the thought or the opinion. It's about who's saying it, right? And Towns is somebody who, you know, whether it's because of the Jimmy Gate, because as Dave, you said, there's something a little polished and precious and messagey about Towns at times. For whatever reason, he has like a low approval rating among fans, among peers in the league. And so he's easy to ride, right? And to your point, Brian, right? Nothing he said was that obnoxious, yet because it's Towns and because various comments in the past, because frankly, he hasn't won. Yet has a superstar persona. I mean, you know, there's nothing more low than a guy who hasn't won, but acts the superstar, right? Like, we just don't have, Beal kind of gets a pass there because he's a good guy, but it's just something that I think people are allergic to. And for whatever reason, and Towns sort of isn't, I don't want to say he's invited it. It just kind of has happened.
Yeah, well, the other thing is that he's had some dud, although, you know, he's still new to the playoffs. He's only had a handful of games, but he's also had some duds. He's talked up, he's talked up, you know, himself and his team, and he's laid some duds, and they've had moments, you know, even in the regular season where you have expectations from him and he doesn't. But I have to say, like, you know, I liked Memphis in this series for a couple of reasons. One was their incredible depth. One was that they, you know, they had home court advantage. And then the other, I just assumed that Ja was going to be terrific. I mean, Ja is an ascendant superstar. I'm covering a series right now, which we'll talk about in a little while, where Brandon Ingram, playing in his first playoff series, is verifying his status in the league. He scored three straight 30-point games. It has been an establishing point for Ingram to this point. And considering Ja had some playoff experience under his belt, considering the regular season that he had, I had high expectations for him. And look, there's only been four games played as we record this. But Kevin, he has not performed that well. In his last two games, I'm looking at the numbers right now, he's 9 of 31. And not that you're only going to judge him on his shooting, but they need, especially in this series, they need that offensive machine going. I know he had the knee injury. What is your feeling about the way Ja is performing so far in this series?
I think he's moving too fast. He's such a wonderfully frenetic player. Like his kinetic energy kind of fuels them when he's on the floor. But too many times, I think he's less studied. I thought game two, he was fantastic. And he was just sort of, again, leveraging sort of the pressure, finding open looks. But too many times he has just been kind of roaring into the teeth of the paint. I don't think really studying the defense. And look, he's such a, you want Ja to be Ja. He's driven by impulse, right? This is not Chris Paul. This is not someone who is a possession control point guard. And I thought, you know, there were times in look, he had 15 assists the other day. And I thought,
yeah, oh, he's putting up huge assist numbers. Yeah. I think he's averaging like 12 or 13 assists. He's turning the ball over a lot, but you know, okay.
And there, I mean, he's having his stuff blocked at the rim regularly. I mean, I think it was like three or four instances the other night. I think that was game three. But it's just a little, I don't want to say out of control, because again, I think you want him to be a little reckless. That's sort of his gift. He is a chaos guy. But I just think there is a more studied brand of point guardism that you kind of want when the game tightens up. And he's been good. I feel, the fact that you and I are sitting here critiquing him, I think speaks to not only his brilliance, but the level of potential. Like, you know, we're looking at a guy who's got a true shooting percentage of like 58, 59 in the series and saying, not so good. You know, I mean, that kind of speaks to that. But I think they did a nicer job of, I mean, Bane has been fantastic. And they are so good when they kind of do that. Almost Portland, you know, Damian, CJ, height of their offense, where they got these like perimeter actions and Bane is just coming off and shooting Like, and he shot the lights out in game four, but they just haven't pieced it together. And frankly, I mean, we don't talk about him, but Jaren Jackson Jr., who is a near max contract, I think starting next year, he has got to find his offensive game. And they're not, I think, going to get very far if he is a wretch four who's sitting out in the corner hitting 29% of his three pointers, you know, not getting paint touches, on the bench constantly with foul trouble, you know, for all the town's foul trouble, you know, Jackson's been equally kind of in trouble.
You know, Dave, I feel like Memphis is still a player away. I'm not, they have the megastar. I still think they need another player. I think that their front office is probably going to, spend a lot of time thinking about how they can get that other player. But one of the things that people were talking about coming into this series, and it was kind of, it did kind of make me stop for a second, is that the Timberwolves had the better top end talent, that Anthony Edwards and Karl Towns are better than the Grizzlies top end talent. And Dave, you've covered the NBA for a really long time. You've covered a bunch of championship teams. Top end talent in the playoffs is worth its weight in platinum. And so maybe I didn't pay as much attention to that as I should, even though Anthony Edwards has not been what he could be in this series.
Live podcast, we have a vacuum situation here going on behind me, so I'm going to adjust my location. Sorry about that.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, barrel-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Isn't the playoffs great? You end up in bizarre conference rooms and hotels.
Here we go. This will probably work.
Coffee shops.
Yeah, here we go. Okay, so we're getting to what Memphis is. I mean, excuse me, what Memphis is going to do in terms of adding another superstar?
No, I was asking about I was asking about the top end talent, about how important that is.
Yeah, I mean, listen, let's start with Morant. And Brian, you termed him an ascending star, which certainly is career trajectory wise. But right now, what he is revealing that he doesn't have to his game is his ability to ascend, because his knee is not right. And he's someone who's not going to make excuses in terms of he's going to be out there and playing games, which is a lot more than can be said about some of the other young quote unquote stars in the league right now. And I don't even need to name the name, because you can hear the distaste in my voice when I describe who we all know who I'm thinking about. But at the same time, he is not the full Ja Morant experience right now. Now, that could be enough to get through Minnesota and still make a notable run, but let's remember that he missed 9 games late in the regular season with that knee injury, and he's still working through it. As far as the rest of their team, I don't know if they need to have a star system. You want to get more out of Jaren Jackson Jr. offensively, but they remind me a little bit of the Miami Heat team I'm covering right now, where Bam Adebayo has offensive skills, certainly, but they don't necessarily need him to do that if he's going to be so locked in defensively, because whereas the Heat have a guy like Duncan Robinson going off for 27 in game one, Memphis has a Bane going for 20 one night, and then it's Tyus Jones the next night, et cetera, down the list on that roster.
Yeah, Kevin, seeing them now for a week, I think at the start of the playoffs, there were some people who thought they would have a, you know, they match up well with Golden State and they have some confidence against Golden State and that they could, you know, potentially win that series if everything, if things fell just right. And, you know, who knows against the Suns? Like there were, I mean, they weren't, you know, a great odds, but there were people who saw them getting to the finals and maybe they will. But whereas I have watched Golden State and been more impressed, whereas I have watched Boston and been more impressed, even Milwaukee, they haven't played perfectly and they stubbed their toe and they have the Middleton injury, but you can't watch Milwaukee. And especially Grayson Allen, who's having an unconscious week, and not be say, boy, they the defending champs are impressive. You know, I'm not feeling great about the Grizzlies, even if they're able to get through this series. And, you know, that can change. The playoffs change. Teams get through, get changed. But I'm not even sure about their matchup with Golden State right now, if that's what ends up happening, Kevin.
I mean, and you said it before, you're kind of a top end talent guy, which makes all the sense in the world. And their top end talent hasn't really played great. You know, Dave brought up the, you know, Jaws complete health. By the way, I misspoke earlier. He's not shooting 58% true shooting. It's 50.4, which makes a lot more sense and isn't very.
Yeah, good. I was like, I was like, okay, if you say so, but okay.
No,
yeah.
They're shooting as a team 58 when he's on the floor. So I mixed up, which by the way is important, right? I mean, that is like when he's on the floor, they're a very good shooting team because, and in fact, that sort of speaks to something, which is he's not shooting well, but man, this team shoots well when he's on the floor. Why? Because you have three Minnesota defenders collapsing on him. And when he can get the ball out to Desmond Bane, for instance, on the left wing, you know, who is shooting the lights out, they score points. And he gets not only an actual assist, but you see the dynamic working, which is even when he's not shooting well, he's able to empower other players. But to your point, do they have enough? And it's a term I use a ton, but I'm sorry, it is the mother's milk of basketball, shot creation. Right. This is everything we're talking about is that. And, you know, Brooks can have moments. He's a good bully baller. Bane is a knockdown shooter. You know, Jackson theoretically can contribute. I don't mean to bag on him all the time, but like,
yeah,
but he's a major.
It's very clear that you're not impressed with the way Jaren Jackson's playing in this series. And that's why you're here. That's what I want to hear.
Right. And it's like to your point, if they're going to have a chance against the Golden State, they're going to have to get some front court production that isn't, hey, Brandon Clark catching lobs, which he is wonderful at, but they're going to have to. The four-man is so important in today's game, and you see it in every single series. And, you know, in Jackson, you could argue is even really a five, but defensively, and they're getting, they just don't have a lot up there. There's not, and look, they're never going to be a post team. It's just not where Taylor Jackson lives. It's not where Taylor Jenkins lives. That is a major facet here is they have their second best player. If you think he is your second best player, he is paid like your second best player, is not on the floor. And when he is, he's marginal. He has far fewer field goals made than he has personal fouls.
Not good. So this isn't exactly a hard hitting expert analysis, but whoever wins game five in this series is probably going to win the series. But I really, and I still believe Memphis will, but these teams' youth is so in your face and you feel it all the time. You feel their talent. You see what Towns can do. You see what Edwards can do. You can see Morant. You see Bane, like, but there's so much youth in this series that it's kind of makes it unpredictable. And this is obvious because we saw that crazy game three where there was these wild swings. Wolves up by 20, tie game, Wolves up by 20, lose by five or whatever it was. It's going to be a roller coaster. Going to be a roller coaster even within these games. And that's a victory, I think, for Minnesota. If it's a scramble and it comes to that and it's just like who can put together five good possessions in the minute that it matters to maybe win the 50-50 game. Like, you know, frankly, if Memphis is serious about being a contender, and again, I've described it as they need their Andre Iguodala move, which is ironic because they had Andre Iguodala last year or whatever it was 2 years ago. or their David West move, which I remember when the Pacers had these young guys and they brought in David West. And I don't know who that player is, to be clear. I'm not saying, oh, go do this. But if Memphis finding itself in this position is a reminder of, you know, why their status is a little bit held back because they've got all that youth, and why you need experience at this level.
Right. Right. Youth is high variance, right? Like that is exactly what you're saying. And it's why, frankly, in the playoffs, you know, I like you like the top talent guys. I like the old guys, right? Like generally speaking, you know, it took Milwaukee kind of growing up and having, and you looked at, okay, Holiday, Middleton and Giannis. Now those are grownups, right? These guys aren't really grown up yet. And it kind of speaks to their wonderful potential. And I agree with you. They need, you know, it's funny, what they need is Kyle Anderson, who can actually shoot or has some offensive game, right? Like they need that kind of glue guy. And I love Kyle, and we all appreciate it, the wizardry of his slowness. But at the end of the day, he's just not enough of an offensive threat to be that guy, though he does provide some glue. But like they have Elmer's glue, and that what they need is what you're saying is they need like that stuff that you put on the guy and he's like hanging from the thing, like the crazy glue. Like that's what
Gorilla Grip.
You're absolutely right. Yes, but that one. That I couldn't
they I met with Zach Kleiman, their GM, during the regular season. He has a wonderful story himself, not just his team. He used to be a game night public relations intern for the Lakers years ago, and I used to cover the team, and we've stayed in touch since. And he told me,
how do you feel about his Duke roots, Dave? Can you get past his Duke roots as you wear your Syracuse?
It's just law school though. It's not undergrad. So you get a little bit of
rejected. It counts. Duke counts.
I would love for you to do a full web exclusive only rant on your full Duke ethos at some point, Brian. But Zach told me that he is in no rush. And that's the beauty of their team construction right now, where he felt like, yes, we have these assets. And yes, a window is opening for us, but we don't need to go and choose that player mid-season. Let's see how this year plays out. Let's see how we perform on the brightest stage and then adjust from there. Now, the question is, as Kevin was laying out the player would be perfect for them, I'm thinking about a player I'm covering this series in PJ Tucker. But the problem is, if so long as a place like Miami has a championship contender plus is Miami, or San Francisco has that, or one of the LA teams has that, you're going to lose out on these marquee guys who are veterans because they can offer the locale plus the winning experience to take a pay cut to join the group. Whereas, hey, Memphis, we all like barbecue here, but it doesn't offer the same thing.
That's true. Well, Iguodala still gets ripped because he didn't play there. And I wonder what would happen if he did, although they're tanking.
I'm sure he cries himself to sleep at night about that.
I'm sure that's
Look, in this series, it might not matter because what you're saying, both of you are saying is, you know, and what I would say is eventually Jackson needs to move to the five and they need a four man like Iguodala, who's, you know, essentially now in the modern game a four, PJ Tucker, that guy who can, you know, do that thing. And the problem is, you know, and one of the reasons I'm going back and kind of in my final analysis, what makes Minnesota so tough is Jackson. You know, you lose him as a help defender if you put him in the five and he's guarding Towns. He will last on the floor for 7 minutes before he gets three fouls against Towns. Yeah. You know, for all of his touting as defensive player in the year, the guy can't stay on the floor.
Well, and I had his scouts actually suggest that to me, that because I expressed my kind of disappointment in Memphis this series, and he said it's a terrible matchup for them. It may say 2-7, but it's not really a 2-7. And under a different matchup, you'd see a different performance. And their difficulty handling Towns it speaks to that. Okay, so here in New Orleans, you know, I was at the opening night this year. They played Philadelphia. As I recall, this could be proven wrong to me, so don't, you know, use this against me. But as I recall, the game was not sold out. There was a complete lack of energy in the building. Zion was obviously out. He didn't even in what I think was a sort of a classic thing, and I know it was probably just a miscommunication, but, you know, on opening night, they announce all the players, they run out of the tunnel and they shoot up, you know, smoke. So they're introducing all these players, and it comes to Zion, and Zion is out indefinitely. It's the only time the fans are going to get to see him, you know, for a while. And they thought he was coming out, and they say, Zion Williamson. The crowd puts up the biggest cheer. The smoke goes off. No Zion. He came out midway, you know, he came out a few minutes later, just didn't come out. And I was just like, you know, come on, man. But my point is that there was not much going on here in New Orleans at that point. And then I come here for the playoff games, and the crowd is absolutely in love with this team. And you talk about your David West, your Andre Iguodala move. The Pelicans made it. They traded for CJ McCollum, and CJ McCollum is not a perfect player, and CJ McCollum may not get him to the promised land, but that move solidified roles, gave them a veteran leader who's got a ton of playoff experience, and it's made a huge difference. I mentioned the way Brandon Ingram is playing. Brandon Ingram in game two of this series scored 37 points, hit three or four shots in the fourth quarter of that game where the Suns players were all over him, up in his uniform, because he is 6'10", 6'11", and is almost indefensible. And I can't tell you how much this town is in love with Herb Jones and Jose Alvarado, those two rookies. And it's not just a gimmick. Jose Alvarado is not a gimmick. He is a glorified, he is a certified pest. And he unnerved Christopher Paul in game four of this series. Chris Paul was so frustrated with Grand Theft Alvarado, as they call him, that he got a flagrant foul, which he borderline could have been ejected for. You know, I was fine with him not being ejected, but I've seen lesser guys get ejected in the fourth quarter when they had lost control of the game. Alvarado's up on top of him. He's poking the ball away from him. He harassed him into an 8-second call. He stole the ball from him. Chris Paul got so frustrated that he body slammed Herb Jones, and then he got a technical complaining. He and Herb Jones got into it, and then at one point Herb Jones was on the ground. The Pelicans had the game in hand, and Chris Paul went over to help him up, and Herb looked at him and was like, "Hell no, I'm not letting you pick me up. I don't trust you." And you know what? He's right. I wouldn't trust him either. And so look, the series is 2-2 because Devin Booker got hurt. Okay. The Suns won game one by 11 points, although it was closer than that going into the fourth quarter. And in game two, Booker puts up 31 in the first half. I was writing the story about Booker breaking Charles Barkley's Suns record of 56 points. I wasn't sure he was going to get there, but I was preparing to file a story. Devin Booker breaks Charles Barkley's record. He scored 31 points without even taking a free throw. Okay. And in the third quarter of that game, he pulls his hamstring. That's why it's 2-2. But the Pelicans situation from midseason to now is an example of why teams shouldn't necessarily give up on seasons and why you always keep grinding. They won 36 games. There hasn't been a team win 36 games. I'll give this a trivia question for you. You guys won't get it, but it'll just be interesting to hear you laugh. This isn't our CarMax trivia question. That's what Bontemps does, but here's a little bonus CarMax trivia question. You won't get it. I'm just going to be honest with you. The last time a team with 36 wins, because that's what they had, won a playoff series. Do you even want to hazard a guess? Don't you have to tell me who it is. You can just guess the year. I'm not even sure you'd guess the decade.
I know who almost won. I know the Hawks took that great Celtics team to seven games, having won 36 or 37 games, but I don't know who won.
Oh, no, that Hawks team had to be, they were over 500, weren't they?
No. They won 37 games. No, they won like 37 games.
I'm going to go, but like,
they didn't win. They didn't win the series.
Super old school Toronto Huskies.
It was in 1976. The Toronto Huskies weren't around anymore. But 1976, before I was born, was the last time a 36-win team won a playoff. So they won 36 games, and they got lucky, right? Paul George got COVID. Maybe they win the game anyway. But Paul George gets COVID, and they're able to get through the play-in. Devin Booker gets hurt. I don't know when he's going to come back. Hamstring injuries usually don't heal in days. They heal in weeks. But, you know, Booker has played through hamstring injuries in the past, so maybe he comes back in this series. But they completely have kept on fighting. They have a total identity now. And, you know, they they have re-energized this whole city. You know, Willie Green, I think it was in the game against the Spurs, the first play-in game, he makes that speech. Willie Green's a pretty laid back guy. It's, you know, the fact that he was an assistant under Monty Williams and Steve Kerr is not an accident. He's a laid back guy. He doesn't usually get fiery. Well, in that game against the Spurs, he went on this rant, and it was on TNT or ESPN. I can't remember which, where he, like, you know, is firing his guys up. And even the players were like, he's never done that. And one of the key moments is we got to fight. So, and this is what a good organization does. Okay. The final episode is here exclusively on ESPN Plus, which means all episodes are now streaming. Man in the Arena, Tom Brady, 22 seasons and 10 Super Bowl appearances. Tom Brady, like you've never heard him. Featuring Tom Brady's three sisters, Gisele Bündchen, Tom Brady Sr., Rob Gronkowski, Michael Strahan, and more. All episodes now streaming on ESPN Plus, presented by Under Armour. Ah, that sound has to make you smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Synchronize your online and in-person sales. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/hoop right now. Shopify.com/hoop. Cutting the price of your wireless bill feels good, really good. Actually, it feels great. You should try it. So cut your bill by switching to Straight Talk Wireless, now offering our $45 Silver Unlimited plan. That's unlimited high-speed data and 5 gigabytes of hotspot for just $45 a month. Get nationwide 5G on America's largest, most dependable networks. So why pay a whole lot for your data when you can get unlimited for a whole lot less? The $45 Silver Unlimited plan from Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. At 60 gigabytes, we reserve the right to review your account for usage in violation of Straight Talk's terms and conditions. A month equals 30 days. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. 5G capable device required. Actual availability, coverage, and speed may vary. Everybody in the arena last night has "We Gotta Fight" on their shirts. They put the t-shirts out. It's the start of the
fourth
quarter.
Nicely done, Pelicans yes. Marketing department.
Right. Okay. So we got to fight. Start of the fourth quarter. The Suns are the best fourth quarter team in the NBA. The best clutch team in the NBA. One of the best clutch teams I've ever seen. Chris Paul has had two absolutely killer fourth quarters in this series. Two 19-point fourth quarters. So we're going into the start of the fourth quarter. It's a 10-point game. Pelicans are in good shape. But obviously the Suns, they can overcome that. They shut off all the lights in the whole building, which I wasn't even sure you were allowed to do, but they shut off the entire lights in the whole building like it's the pregame introductions again. This is in the timeout between the third quarter and fourth quarter. And they play a montage highlighted by Willie Green's speech. They basically replay Willie Green's speech in the middle of the dark with "We Gotta Fight" as the, and it fired the crowd up. The crowd was going crazy. And like, I'm like, you're like, this is not a 36-win team. And so Zion Williamson is sitting there and he has got the biggest smile on his face. And I rightfully agree that the Zion Pelicans relationship has been rocky and rough. And it may continue to be rocky and rough. But from where I sit, it sure as hell looks like they have got Zion engaged in this team. And why wouldn't you be? That's the big picture. Zion has bonded with CJ McCollum. And that I defy you to have been at that game last night, Sunday night, and think that there's nothing but great things ahead for this Pelicans team. And so, Dave, they've got a 3-game series now. I am not doubting Devin Booker. It's a tough hamstring injury. I mentioned Brandon Ingram's playing well. Chris Paul is trying to moderate his energy. He's trying to save it for the fourth quarter, but it's hard. They're not, it's hard to ask that. He's playing high minute loads. I still believe in the Suns, and I still am a big believer the Suns can win the whole thing, but there is definitely cracks in the armor that I've seen this last couple games.
They had to be able to win it without Booker. That has to be the mentality. And it is not Chris Paul needing to score 19 in the fourth. That's not a sustainable method, even though he's been brilliant. I think he has more, or he has what, 2 19 point fourth quarters himself. The rest of the league since the start of the season has 2, which I mean, that says it right there.
He has 2 in the series,
right? In the series. Right? Yeah. So 2 in the last 3 games, but to last 4 games. But look at the Shamits, the Crowders, the Bridges. That's where it's going to need to come from. Make it up there, get out, make defensive stops, get in transition, make the game easier on yourself, because Brandon Ingram is going to continue to be a problem here. Just 2 points I wanted to make before I hand the baton off to Kevin on this. One, talking about Zion experiencing this playoff series and seeing what it's like to be a part of that environment. It reminds me of Kevin Love in 14-15. For the Cavs, where that season was rife with turmoil for him.
For sure.
Culminating with a foul, you know, in the Boston series in the first round, he gets hurt. But he sees that run from that point on and falls in love with the environment that the Cavs are building in Cleveland and ends up re-signing and is now the elder statesman of that Cavs team, the only guy remaining. Also, another Cavs connection here, but that's how my brain goes. Jose Alvarado, you know who he reminds me of? How he's making his bones right now? Tyronn Lue, when he was first playing for the Lakers. That's how he became known, not getting stepped over by Allen Iverson, having 5 steals in that finals game against Iverson, many of them against Iverson prior to that moment, and being someone that Phil Jackson could rely on to just completely disrupt what's going on and be – having no governor in terms of I'm going to fully expend myself on that end, that can do so much for a team. I think Alvarado has a bright future. This isn't some, you know, one trick pony.
Yeah. Kevin, when Alvarado does something that the crowd likes, which, you know, is often on with hustle. Although Herb Jones is the more impactful defensive player. He blocked 3 3 pointers last night. One, he got like,
it was brilliant.
13 feet in the air. How about this? As long as I have obscure trivia, who was the last player to block 3 3 pointers in a playoff game? You'll never get it. The guy is active in the playoffs. In fact, he played yesterday. If you get this, I will buy you a 29-inch Ramoa suitcase, Kevin.
Oh, okay. 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 Hold on. That them fighting words.
Hold on. You only get one guess, just for the record. But you will.
All right.
But I can give you 15. Wait.
You were saying this person was active yesterday.
He played in an NBA playoff game yesterday, Sunday.
He played in an NBA.
You won't get it. Game. You won't get it.
Did Rudy get on the floor? Rudy Gay. Wait. This is going to completely torment me.
3 3-point shots blocked in a playoff series. And by the way, I'll even give this. It happened in 2019. How about that?
We both get a guess.
You're not getting a suitcase.
Was it Pat? Because
your memory.
Pat Connaughton. I'm just going to say Pat Connaughton.
No, you Googled it.
No, I didn't. No, I swear to God. Look, I'll screen share.
I'm in trouble with sentiment. I'm in trouble.
Was it Connaughton?
Way to go, Kevin.
There is.
Shout out. I swear to God, how would I Google that in 15 seconds?
I am going to call for an investigation, McMenamin.
No,
I believe Kevin. He would not lie. His face is on screen the whole time.
Is there anything in the chat? We're going to have an investigation. This is an investigation.
What is that? Let's set you back, Brian. What's about 500-600? Let's go, Kev. This is great. We, you could offer dinner.
We will do it in installments. You'll do the first, you'll do like the four wheels and then the casing and then
terrible way to start us to start a week.
I guess it's Gorgie Deng. So, I mean, more power to Kevin.
I
no, because I knew it was going to, it had to be, it had to be a wing and it had to be an athletic wing. And the way you said it, you'll never get it, man. It wasn't going to be like, you know, Zach LaVine or something else. Yeah, it was going to be a reserve guy.
All right. We're going to talk more about this later. You're going to be hearing from my attorney.
You gave me too much. You thought you were being deceptive, but actually you were leading me right to
your
the
defense. I still reject your defense. I'm going to review the chat logs.
You are straight up calling him a bold. No.
Hey,
you
Brian,
that?
Brian,
because I'm going to tell you why.
As they say in my country, Emmis, man, I'm telling you.
Listen, it was in the ESPN Stats and Info Slack channel, McMenamin. So
was it?
You should act.
All right. So as part of the investigation, you will go to our Slack usage and you will find that I did not log on yesterday because I was flying between two Midwestern cities.
All right. We've gotten.
All right. I have a bunch of points to make. Your Zion case is very interesting because, as we know, one of the great sort of subplots in this league are, oh my God, is high draft pick superstar going to stay in this market when they haven't won? Oh my God, Team X has to do this. They have to show him, blah, blah, blah. It's so interesting that right now you could say the same thing about Zion as you could say about Karl Anthony Towns when you think about what his press day press conference was like. I mean, this was a guy who, hey, he had one foot out there. I've been here seven. And you also understand it. Devin Booker was another guy. I mean, how many years did we talk about he's going to the Knicks? He's going to the Knicks. When the hell is the last time anyone has questioned Devin Booker, you know, leaving Phoenix at this point, right? And so what you're saying is so important in the sense that these franchises are so desperate to maintain their stars and they have to do it. And the truth is, yes, the health group is important and this is important and we got a new facility and look, but at the end of the day, it's winning. You want a guy to stay, you win. The other thing is what I love about this team is, you know, 3-16, everything's been said, but I don't know if they're going to win this series. I don't know what their fate is this season, but when you start to look at the construct of this small market team, you know, you look at a guy like Alvarado, looks like Fred VanVleet to me, undrafted, you know, defensive player of the year in the ACC, by the way, which is no child liver, but already emerging as a pesky point guard who can shoot. And the way a franchise like this moves forward is you have to find those guys. They're not going to land. You're certainly not going to get them in free agency, right? You look at Herbert Jones, you know, no one had him playing this way, looking a little bit like a 6'7" two-way guard, or sorry, 6'7" two-way wing, kind of OG Anunoby-ish. You know, like all of a sudden you're finding guys in the rough that, you know, were not well. This is how a team in a front office can actually, you know, create a winner. We can talk about, oh, CJ McCollum, did you really want to take on 3 years and $100 million? It's not your timetable. And I think you answered the question at the top of the segment, Brian, which is you damn well do. Right. And so I think whatever happens to them in this series, and who knows, and you're right, if Booker's playing, we're not having this conversation. But for the first time in a very long time, I think we can all agree the New Orleans Pelicans have an optimistic road ahead. And I think that is what a playoff can do for a team, irrespective of how far they go.
We don't speak, Dave, I don't know if you've heard this, but we don't speak about a certain team based in Southern California right now until the season is over. But that team has a draft pick that is currently eighth. What happens if that pick moves up? What happens if that pick moves up? I'm not even saying to one. I'm just saying, what happens if the pick goes to three or four?
It does not convey to that team in Southern California. That's what happens.
No, it does. It's unprotected. It is an unprotected pick. Unprotected.
Oh, dangerous. I said it does not convey.
Oh, it doesn't convey to, that's right. Yes, it stays in New Orleans. That's right.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So here's what I'd say about the Suns. Dave, I think you're right. And Monty Williams was saying the same thing. He complained about the officiating and there was some calls that didn't go their way. The free throw differential was 42-15. I was wondering to myself as I was seeing it, I go, I wonder if Monty's going to come in and go to that. You know, sometimes it's one of those things that you can't go to every time. And you, it's like, there's like a strategy move. He did, he went to it. But he was the first to say that, you know, that it's not just about losing Booker. They were 9-5 when Booker didn't play during the regular season, 8-3 in real games. Cause he sat a couple at the end where they were sitting a bunch of guys, 8-3 when Booker didn't play in real games. They won game 3 in New Orleans without him. They should be able to get through this series without Booker. Jay Crowder, who was being just the fans were all over him. He's playing hard against Brandon Ingram, but Ingram is eating his lunch because Ingram is just a beast. And he missed his first 15 three-pointers. He finally made one after the crowd was chanting bleep Jay Crowder, bleep Jay Crowder. He hit a three, but he had been 0-15. Cam Johnson has gone to the starting lineup. Excuse me, has gone to the starting lineup to replace Booker. He's 6-19. You know, Chris Paul had a four-point game. He scored 4 points in the first 6 minutes. Didn't score again. Not a single. Didn't get to the free throw line once. Though that is abnormal for the Suns. The Suns are a better team than this. They're a more resilient team than this. I expect them to strike back. But because of what has happened here, because of the Booker injury, they have now put themselves in danger. And it's so hard to win a title. And there's so many things that have to go your way, that putting yourself in danger in the first round in a 1-8 matchup, regardless of how the opponent is, you know, having things go their way a little bit, is not a good place to go. All right, before we go, Dave, I want to touch on the series that you have been covering more. Well, first off, I thought Trae Young's comments, you know, we've talked and everyone's talked a lot about the job that the Celtics have done on Durant, the job the Miami Heat have done on Trae Young in this series. I think he's averaging 16 points a game. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But it's not just about this series, but about where Miami goes in the East. And they're facing potentially a Philly team where Embiid's got a messed up hand. And they are showing their chops. So have the Heat impressed you in these first four games?
Yeah, Brian, there's no better way for me to describe the Heat defense than comparing it to the polycarbonate hard shell of a Rimowa suitcase. It is just impenetrable right now what they bring to the table. And it's so serious is kind of the term that comes to mind, because they really take every possession by possession, and there are a championship head coach Eric Spoelstra going manic on the sidelines, expressing to them that we need to take this possession with urgency. And that happens over and over again. In the third quarter of game 4, when it was already clearly looking like the Heat were going to go up 3-1, you had Jimmy Butler and PJ Tucker getting at one another, like at each other's throats, pointing, yelling. And I asked both of them about it after the game. And Jimmy said, like, hey, PJ's a champ. I want to be a champ. And PJ said, listen, like, we are all about taking this so serious because we want to advance and keep advancing. And that allows us to have our communication be terse in those moments and not have it bleed into over anything that's negative. It's literally, that is our tone. And we are coming ready to battle every game. Impressive. And that's with their offense being lackluster. Kyle Lowry, even before he got hurt, wasn't doing anything offensively. Bam Adebayo still doesn't look in rhythm after missing that week or so with COVID-19 protocols at the finale of the regular season. But you're getting enough offensively from Jimmy. There's one or two guys each game that hit from the outside, whether it be Duncan Robinson or Max Strus. And then their defense is just a behemoth. And they all know what they're doing.
It's a little worrisome that Lowry is out with the hamstring, but he's going to get a rest, it looks like. Kevin, you know Eric Spoelstra and the Heat very well. I was stunned that the Heat were the fifth favorite. I don't bet. I thought it was crazy that the Nets remained the favorite in the East all the way through. I thought it was wild. The Heat came into this postseason as number one seed, as the number five favorite to win the Eastern Conference. I don't know how you could look at the way they're playing in the series and still feel that that's true.
No, and part of their genius is in speaking to kind of Lowry's injury or the fact that Bam, you know, isn't played great, is when you have a system, the great thing about that system is it accommodates next man up, right? Because you kind of just fit into that role. You know, you're able to do, and look, you know, Vincent's never going to be Kyle Lowry, and certainly whoever eats minutes for Adebayo is not going to be that guy. But, you know, the integrity of the system stays the same, right? The Spurs did this really well. And you're not playing ad hoc. You have a defense, as Dave said, that just works no matter who is on the floor. Yes, it requires a little personnel. You're going to get a little more from Jimmy than you will from Duncan Robinson, but it all works. I mean, Atlanta is interesting. You know, they're a really low turnover team in the regular season. They are losing this series on the margins in addition to just the regular stuff, right? Like, they're turning the ball over. They're getting killed on the boards. Their transition defense is just piss poor. They have a really interesting offseason. I know we're talking about the postseason right now, but, and, you know, I don't want to bury a team 3-1, but let's face it. They have a really interesting, something is not working. And generally you would say the defense, but, you know, DeAndre Hunter is actually has the worst defensive rating on the team in the postseason, even though he is their best defender. Like, something is not right. And it's one of those difficult situations, kind of like Portland was, where you can't say, oh, that guy needs to go. Like, oh, trade Collins, really? Like, obviously, Trey is your linchpin. You know, oh, trade DeAndre Hunter, really? Because that's the only guy playing wing defense. And you go up and down the roster and you say, well, trade that guy. Well, I, you know, and so, but they're going to have to do something because, you know, the big question is this the outlier or was last season the outlier? I'm starting to really believe it was last season is the outlier. And maybe that's presentism, but what the hell? I mean, but they're an uninspiring basketball team. And as fun as they can be offensively, I'm sorry, you can't ride a double screen up top to a championship. Like, they're a novelty act right now. They're not a real contender. And until they figure out the composition of that roster, like, there's gonna be a lot of this anytime they play a decent defensive basketball team.
They have
in their defense. Yeah. I will say quickly, Clint Capella missed the entire series up to Game 4 and was limited in Game 4 in terms of minutes. He's been out with a hyperextended right knee. John Collins missed about a month prior to the start of the playoffs, or sort of the series, I should say, with hand and foot injuries, and he hasn't looked like himself. If you have those two players doing what they do, combined with Trae Young, combined with Bogdan Bogdanovic, who's been great this series, and even DeLon Wright's had some moments, and you've seen something from Onyeka Okongwu, like, it's not that you say this team is lost. Game 1, they're coming off the quick turnaround 36 hours after winning that emotional game in Cleveland. Like, in a different circumstance against a less serious team, I sure think they would be okay.
But Dave, they're the 26th ranked defense in the regular season. They're like third from the bottom in the playoffs. Like, hey, and I have a little tough love because I'm from Atlanta and, you know, I grew up with this team, but like, I'm sorry. Like, yeah. But meanwhile, Capella probably isn't playable in a fair number of series, which is not his fault. It's just the reality of big man life in the NBA. And look, you're following the series more closely than I am, but I've seen enough. I've seen enough to believe this is a putrid defensive team, no matter who is on the floor and no matter who is not running back in transition. And Trae Young is a sieve. And when you start watching good defensive teams where their point guard can fight over, you know, God, it's like, you've ever watched an Atlanta Hawk first half and then change the channel and watch the Milwaukee Bucks in the second half, and you go from watching Trae Young to Jrue Holiday. It's like being beamed into the future. It's like, I'm sorry, they're just defective. And, you know, I know they had a nice run last season, but this team is going nowhere with this defensive composition. I don't know if it's a system. I think Nate McMillan's generally historically a good defensive coach. Yeah, I don't mean to rant, but I don't care who, I don't care if Tree Rollins is out there, John Konkak. I don't care. Like
is Konkak still under contract?
I think he's still getting paid. Like Bobby Bonilla, you know, I think it's like one of those, but all I'm saying is I got to tell you, like, it doesn't matter. it's defective, and it starts at the top of the floor, and they're going to have to figure out whether Trae Young ever wants to fight through a screen in his entire life. They're going to have to figure out if a wing not named DeAndre Hunter is not a blow-by matador. And who the hell, what can Capella do? Like, what can he do?
Well,
I think the existential question is Trae Young. Can Trae Young provide a modicum of defense where it's not playing a 4-on-5? And if he can't, is everything he brings offensively worth it? And that's what, to me, is what this team needs to figure
out. Well, they wanted to be Warriors East. Now's about the time to figure out how to be Steph Curry, where you play a passable brand of team defense. So you want to be Warriors East, this is what it looks like. You got to have to figure out how that guy can be accommodated in a system. Oh, it also would help if you had a Draymond Green as well.
Right. Well, they're a very expensive team, and they're about to get more expensive because I think Trae Young is going to make all NBA and trigger the Rose provision and get his Supermax. And they got to pay DeAndre Hunter. And I just don't know. I would be very surprised if that team looks the same next season. Before we go on the Heat, Jimmy Butler, after having a season full of nagging injuries, and just, you know, I mean, he had a good year, but he wasn't right the whole year. Well, he has come roaring to life in this series. He has had a couple of spectacular games. And that is a great sign for the Heat. And you guys know how I feel about Embiid. I voted for him for MVP. And I really felt this was going to be a huge playoff moment for him. I wasn't predicting him to win the East, but I thought he was going to absolutely have elevate and have a transcendent playoffs. This injury that he has, I've covered 5 or 6 players over the years who've had this injury. It's an auto surgery. Auto. It's 6 weeks. I remember I covered Shaquille O'Neal when he had it. I remember he told me, he goes, "I can't hold the ball." Mike Miller did it to both thumbs in the same season, had to have 2 surgeries. Bam Adebayo had it happen to him earlier this year, and he missed, I think, 6 or 7 weeks.
Miller's dad, Eli Gemstone.
I think he can shoot it, but I mean, his rebounding and passing are vital to them. I think, Bontemps, he's covering the series. He told me that in the first game after the injury, Embiid had his fewest rebounds in 6 weeks. Of course, it could be just a one-off. And, you know, Doc Rivers said he thinks he'll get to play with it. But, you know, I think 8 days or whatever it is, 10 days into these playoffs, advantage Warriors, because the Grizzlies and Suns are looking a little rough. Advantage Miami Heat, because they're looking good. And Philly's best player just got hurt. So we'll see how that plays out.
And Boston.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we were big
believers on this podcast in Boston already. They were, you know, the number one defensive team in the league for a reason in the second half. So, but Boston still got to potentially play Milwaukee. Their path didn't get any easier, although I guess Middleton got hurt. So we'll see how that goes. Hey, Dave, thanks for making time for this. Dave's got to get on to Miami. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate our producer, Jackson, who's going to edit out my promise of a Ramoa suitcase to Kevin as I engage an attorney. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We'll talk to you later this week.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.